This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Let's get into the list. Tiger basketball. All right, Cobb, you just sent this over. This comes to us from Will Warren. His Substack is Stats by Will. And this is the tagline. If you just looked at pure performance against the Vegas spread, nothing Memphis does would stand out that much. They're 14-16 against the spread on the season, which isn't great, but is more or less average for their conference. In conference play, however, they've gone 6-11 against the spread, the worst of anyone in the American. As a favorite, they're 8-14 against the spread, which goes with a pretty annoying Penny Hardaway era trend that Memphis is historically committed to. Memphis, since the 2020-21 season, as an underdog, is 24-10 against the spread. It's the second best mark in the American. I'd like to see, there's a lot of outright wins in there too.
That's the crazy thing.
I'd like to see the outright wins because that's going to be high. Memphis as a favorite over that time, 52-69, nice, and third worst in the American. Memphis as a favorite of 7+ points, so 7 points or more, 23-46-2, sixth worst against the spread percentage of 364 Division I teams. All right, before everyone asks, like, who cares, I will say this. You want to know why your efficiency numbers aren't great? You don't cover the spreads.
Against bad teams. As a 7+ point favorite, 23-46 against the spread. But at the same time, 24-10 as an underdog? That's insane. That's insane performance as an underdog.
So, and again, I'd like to see. I'm willing to bet there's 15 outright wins.
Probably so. I mean, I would be willing to bet they were an underdog against a lot of these teams they beat in the non-conference. So it's good confirmation of like everything that we've seen. They rise to the occasion against the good teams, and they drop to the competition against the bad teams. It's just who they are. So if you're discounting what Memphis can accomplish in the NCAA tournament, take a look at these numbers, because you get them into a Sweet 16 spot where they're a 3 or 4 point underdog, that's where they thrive.
All right, I wanted to see results and trends. Let's see. As a dog, all right, they were dog against UNLV, 1-6. They were dog against San Francisco, 1-4. UConn, they were dog 8.5, 1-2. Michigan State, dog. So, all right, so far we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. They were a dog to Auburn and lost. So that's 4-1 ATS and 4-1 straight up.
UConn. Surely they were a dog against.
They
UConn,
were 8.5 against UConn. They were dog against Clemson, 1 outright. So that's 5-1. They were dog to Mississippi State but lost. They were favored against Ole Miss, and they actually closed as a 1-point dog against UAB. So was that 7-1?
That's amazing.
That's 7-1, and straight up and overall. Like against the spread and straight up.
Yeah. So can you just can you channel that again in March? I mean, hopefully so. I think Memphis would be a good bet in a game like that where they're a 4 or 5 point dog because we've seen it. The trends don't lie.
I do wonder because I think in some years I could kind of chalk up the conference favorite as they played too many guys, and so it never let you. The thing that was a little troubling this year is like at times you could kind of tell like they were trying to push and cover. Like I'm not saying the cover was what was the motivation. I think what the motivation was, it's finally gotten through to Penny. Like, hey, when you got a chance to like win these games by 15 or more, like you've got to go do it. They still at times haven't been able to do it.
No. The UTSA game, man, what a maddening, just the whole thing, the whole situation, being in that podunk rinky-dink gym, the
joke
confusion
was,
at the end of the game.
The joke was everyone was making the joke, like, I didn't know they were playing at Ridgeway, because their logo.
That's what it looks like, the road one, yeah. The Roadrunners, right? So yeah. It's perfect, yeah. I mean, honestly, there's been a lot of guys that come through Ridgeway High School who'd be a whole lot better than some of the guys playing for that UTSA team, man,
one.
So here they are, man. They got a chance to clinch it outright. Either, I think North Texas loses either of its final two games. Memphis wins it outright, and of course, if Memphis beats South Florida, they won it outright.
North Texas has two left.
Yeah, they play tonight and Sunday. So North Texas would have to win both, and Memphis would have to lose to South Florida for them to share.
Yeah, I knew that they would, and it's like you share, but you only played once and you won.
True. So Memphis has secured the number one seed in the AAC tournament. And they got at least a share. It's like a 99.7% chance that they're going to have won this thing outright, which, I mean, it was the expectation all along, right? So when you really get down to it, I told Gabe this yesterday. I put more stock in. Like, when we remember this Memphis basketball season 5 years from now, I'm not going to remember, oh, yeah, that's the year they won the AAC regular season title. Oh, I'm going to remember – that's the year they beat Missouri and UConn and Michigan State and Ole Miss. And apparently they were even dogs to UNLV and San Francisco, which I didn't realize, you know? So it's like, that's what I'll remember is the non-conference, honestly. I know to the team, to the coaches, to the players, to the university, like hanging a banner, winning a conference championship, that's meaningful. And it should be. I'm not diminishing what the significance of that, but it, just in terms of generally speaking, what's more significant 5 years from now in terms of the way a fan's going to remember the season? Probably the non-conference.
No, I think you're definitely right. In terms of the high profile, the emotional games that you remember, that's true. I actually think it's a good accomplishment, though, and here's why. I think it actually encompasses what this season meant to me, which is this was a year where it was really chaotic and it felt like it was off the rails. Just like during the summer and then in September when they fire the whole staff. And to me, what makes this season different than other Penny Hardaway seasons is, yeah, they weren't perfect in conference play, but I looked it up. There's only one team that has one conference loss. Everyone else has multiple losses. It's like, I'm sorry, there are two. I think it's Duke and Yale. So like everyone's not going undefeated, but they were this is by far their most consistent performance in conference play. And to me, like, that's the difference between this year. It's like they were not perfect, but they were stable and they were solid and they were steady. And like it's a whole season. And what we've seen is these teams under him like ride the roller coaster. But I totally acknowledge like this is the lowest form of the AAC that you've ever competed in. But it was bad last year and you didn't win it last year.
Exactly right. So, I mean, now it's kind of like, all right, you're the champion. Now, how much do you clean up in the awards? Is Penny the coach of the year? Is PJ the player of the year?
I believe someone can look this up. I think the AAC announced that Sharif is going to be the coach of the year, the USF coach that died.
Okay.
Remind me his name.
Hey, Abdul Rahim. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's got to be an actual coach of the year.
No,
though,
I think they announced, like, I think to start conference play, they announced like he would be the coach of the year, and then they were going to name the award after him following.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think there's a cop out. Okay. But did you see what my beloved West Coast Conference did?
Oh no, what'd they do now?
So basically, they just were going to give every award to St. Mary's, which fine. St. Mary's is the best team in the league by far. But like they put 10 guys on the first team all WCC. 10. But basically it was because like, well, we just don't want St. Mary's to get it. It's like, why? Were they the best team?
Yeah, okay, let's be clear about this. There should be 5 players on a first team. You know why? Because there's 5 players that participate in a basketball game.
That's a 10's a rotation.
Time. Yeah. So, we don't need to be putting 30 players on a first team all conference football ballot. Okay, I can understand naming the AAC coaches.
Yeah, that one makes
coach
sense.
Coach of the Year award. I name it after Amir Abdur-Rahim, absolutely. But like you still have to give it to Penny Hardaway, right? Like Penny Hardaway is going to win the Amir Abdur-Rahim Coach of the Year award, right? Like
I went and checked because I was curious as well. Abdur-Rahim was named the honorary Coach of the Year, and the award, another award, will be created and named for him. The Amir Abdur-Rahim Sportsmanship Award will be presented annually to the student athlete who, as determined by the league's head coaches, best exemplifies the qualities of sportsmanship, fair play, and leadership.
So are they going to also name a Coach of the Year?
I believe so, since this one is just an honorary award to Coach Abdur-Rahim.
Okay, because I was confused when it came out. It was almost like that they were just I had interpreted as he was going to be the Coach of the Year this year.
Honorarily, which is great. I'm glad they're doing that.
I mean, it was gotta be an actual coach. It was a horrible situation. Like,
without a doubt, that didn't help the AAC either. The fact that one of their best teams from last season literally lost its head coach on the eve of the season. I mean, just brutal, right? So Penny deserves to be the Coach of the Year, in my opinion. I mean, I think you could argue for Ross Hodge at North Texas because, I mean,
they were
pretty good.
And they were picked like 7th.
Sure. So if you want to go with the overperforming underdog, same discussion you could have in the SEC right now. It's like, okay, is Dennis Gates the Coach of the Year because Missouri went 0-18 last year? Or are we just going to give it to Bruce Pearl because he won the league outright? You know, or could you go, Mark Byington was picked to finish last. He took Vandy to the NCAA tournament. So it's like, what's your criteria? Because the coach who led their team to the conference championship was Penny Hardaway in Memphis. And they weren't even predicted to win it. They were predicted to finish 2nd behind UAB. So if I had a vote for AAC Coach of the Year, I would vote for Penny. Factoring in as well what they did in the non-conference. That's to me what sets them apart. I know it's the AAC Coach of the Year, so I'm not sure if you're supposed to incorporate November and December into that, but I don't see how you can't when you're evaluating the season. I think Penny's got to be your conference coach of the year.
No, I agree with you. Like, I think though, in general, it feels like the standard for coach of the year is usually who does the most with the least.
But nobody did anything with anything in the AAC. The rest
Correct.
Of the league is garbage.
Well, no, there's only one person that did anything.
Yeah, right.
And so.
And again, like, if you really want to stump for North Texas and Ross Hodge, like, whatever, I'll hear you out. But, I mean, come on. Really?
Yeah, and I think, though, this is the larger question, because Penny was on with Jason and John yesterday, and they asked him about the conference and scheduling, and basically Penny's stance was, hey, the commissioner's got to push for everyone to schedule harder. And I want to be clear. I think he's right. I also think it's really hard. I don't think anyone else other than Memphis in the league can get the games of the quality Memphis gets. And I'm not as clear on this. If Memphis had generic coach, like let's say they had Steve Forbes, would they still be getting the same games? I think you probably
It'd be
get
tough.
I think you probably get Ole Miss. I think you probably get Mississippi State. They're willing to play you. Do they get invited?
Do you get an invite to Maui?
I don't know.
Penny Hardaway being your head coach, right? I don't think you do. I think the fact that you have Penny Hardaway as your head coach, and you know, at least early on, he was recruiting at such a high level that it really interested. I mean, there's no better way to get people to watch your early season tournament in November than to have a bunch of 5-star freshmen on your team, and that's how Penny started out building this program. he gets onto the radar of an event like Maui. But if Steve Forbes or generic coach A, B, or C is your coach, I don't think you get the Maui invite. So
I'm also I don't know if you get the Clemson game. We know Penny fact because Tony Bennett like admired Penny, like that was how that series came to be. Another aspect of this is part of how like they've gotten like the Texas A&M series when they had that Alabama. It's like oftentimes what happens is the schools will like reach out to ESPN or CBS and be like, "Hey, can we get this game like on TV? Would you be down with that?" Because there's no TV contracts, you know, specific for one school, and everyone's like, "Yeah, we can sell Penny Hardaway. We can put that on."
I'll tell you one series that having Penny Hardaway as the coach has kept Memphis from participating.
Yes, that would be the Tennessee series.
That's right. If anybody else other than Penny Hardaway is the coach, I think Memphis and Tennessee are playing a basketball right now. Small price to pay. I'd love to have that series. Small price to pay, though, for all these other good ones that Penny's brought. I mean, that's the thing that I don't know Penny gets enough credit for as a head coach. Now, he's a master scheduler. I mean, his non-conference schedules have consistently been great and given his team the chance to build what they need to build. But yeah, is it even possible? Is it plausible for UTSA to build a similar schedule? No, I don't think it is. But I thought Tim Pernetti had something interesting that he told Munns in the story that Jason did the other day. Basically, we need to do, okay, I know in college sports we're sticking here in the alliance thing because how often do these things actually pan out? But
the last one worked out pretty well.
But if Memphis played the AAC regularly played A-10 schools or regularly played Mountain West schools and some of these other not high major conferences that actually have genuine basketball aspirations played each other, that could make sense because then it's not all quad four. You go on the road against an A-10 team, there's a decent chance that ends up being quad one. At worst, it's quad two. So then you at least give yourself a chance to win the game. So it's not like you're Rice and you're just going to get your brains beat in by Texas Tech. I mean, if you go and play Dayton or something, okay, maybe you got an outside shot to win the game and it's still a quad one or quad two, you know? So I think that would be smart, right? Do a scheduling agreement where the AAC plays the A-10, they play the Missouri Valley, they play some of these other somewhat respectable conferences and all boats rise with the tide.
So I would be curious. This isn't like unheard of. Like I don't remember if it was Sankey or Slive, but the SEC, like they had years where they were just getting three teams in and they brought in the scheduling guru and like they went to work. But I also want to be fair to like these schools. Like it was a lot easier for SEC schools to start scheduling like they did because they had some name recognition. And then they had at a certain point, they had the power of ESPN backing them. Like, I just am not convinced like that, you know, FAU, Charlotte, UTSA, Rice, the schools you just mentioned. Like, I think North Texas even struggles getting some games. Like, I don't think you can just snap your fingers. And then the other issue that I see is like with your A-10 thing, okay, you got VCU at 29 in the net, George Mason 77, Dayton 69, nice, St. Joe's is 70, everyone else is, St. Bonaventure was 99, everyone else was over 100. Like, I don't even know if that formula works anymore.
Yeah, but that's better than beating up on the Southland Conference or beating up on the OVC. You got five top 100 net teams in a conference. That's pretty good for a mid-major. It's going to help. I'm not saying it's going to move the needle exponentially, but it's going to nudge them in the right direction with the scheduling because it's just so bad right now. And I thought Penny had something interesting he said. I can't remember where it was. I saw it recently basically saying a lot of these coaches are just trying to get to 20 wins. There might be a contract incentive, or it's just hard to fire a coach as an AD when, well, he won 20 games, you know, so we can't fire him. He won 20 games. I mean, come on, that'd be crazy, which is a horrible way of thinking, right? So, but if your goal is to stay employed and you want to trick your athletic director into thinking you're a good coach, you're going to go and schedule the Southland Conference. You're going to schedule the SWAC, and then you're going to schedule the OVC and then, you know, go 8-10 in the AAC, be 221st at in the net, but you know your AD is going to say, "Well, he went 19-11. You know, we can't fire that guy. Come on."
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Like this, at this point, options should be on the table. Like we're at the stage of like ideas. I just kind of think like
man, I the way the universe is going, like, I just think it's going to get harder and harder for mid-majors to get to have beefy schedules. Because what we're starting to see is, like, the SEC and the Big Ten are, like, going to do their own little thing. The ACC, like, they have the SEC-ACC challenge. But I just think it's starting to get harder and harder to get these games. But then the other problem that I see, and this is kind of what we've been talking about. You know the biggest problem that I have with the American right now?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's so many to pick from. Where do you start?
I think what's starting to get at fans is, like, you look around and you realize, like, who's serious here? And I think it's, like, so easy for everyone to sit there and go, well, yeah, we want to win. Okay, but let's be clear what it takes to win right now. Money. And I'm not picking on these schools because I think a lot of them, if they had the money, they would like to spend it, but they don't have it. I think that's what's starting to get depressing is you look around and Cobb, like, the only school that, like, really spends on anything is Tulane.
Mm.
And I think USF kind of would like to, but it feels like USF's still trying to, like, build a stadium for football. So I think that's what's starting to become the biggest frustration is that if you're in this league, you just become, like, irrelevant by association because nobody else is taking it seriously.
It's especially true on the basketball side. Especially true. I would venture to guess. I can't prove this, but my guess would be that Memphis spends at least four times as much on its basketball roster every year than the next closest competitor in the AAC. I mean, I got to imagine the Memphis basketball roster budget is far in excess, beyond, above and beyond what anyone else in the league. Now in football, Tulane, you know,
I think it's Memphis and Tulane. You could tell me either team's got more money, but I think those are the two.
So it's a problem. I mean, but at the same time, like, you should dominate it, right? And that's what Memphis did this year. So, like, you got to give them their flowers. Like, they're going to win this league outright, which they hadn't done before. And it took all the other good teams leaving for it to finally happen. But it happened, and they got through it. And there was no drama that we heard about, at least, right? So it was – this was never guaranteed. But they're here, and they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're a lock for the dance. It's all in all, given where this season started, I mean, just a phenomenal – job by this Memphis basketball team.
Well, like, the other worry that I'd have about the league is, okay, Memphis has stated its intention to participate in revenue sharing. And I want to be very clear. I think they have to. I think that is going to be like if you do not participate, you're never moving up. I don't know if it guarantees you the right to move up, but you're not moving up. I don't know if this is legal, but I think there are going to be a lot of schools in this conference that are going to make a strong push to set some kind of cap on how much you can spend on revenue sharing. And if I'm Memphis, like, that is a no deal. Like, we cannot. That would be my fear. Like, the league is already backsliding massively. My biggest fear is there isn't really a path to getting it back.
No, is it because all the brands have departed? I mean, you think about who you had in here at one time or another. Cincinnati and Central Florida and Houston. And
don't forget Louisville and Rutgers for a year.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that's it. There's just no value in these brands. But is there the alternative, though? Is it the new Pac-12?
So, I mean, the way that I see it is, you kind of have four scenarios. You can do the Pac-12 or whatever, Pac states, because they all have states in their names. You can do that, but I think you have to, if you're going to make that decision, I think you have to be comfortable with, we're not going to get out of there. Because I think if you go there, the way the contract will be stated, I think it's going to be really difficult for you to go there and then to eventually go to the Big 12 or the ACC. All right, so I would presume you are in agreement with me. The ACC ending the suit, the lawsuits, and establishing a buyout price, their days are numbered.
Yeah, 2030, because that's when the price drops now.
So
to get out,
the only way that I see the ACC remaining intact is if those schools that want out can't get out. Like, no one's offering them a spot. The problem, though, is if that happens, that means probably linear television as a model has completely gone apart. And so Fox is not willing to add the additional revenue, and ESPN is not willing to add the additional revenue. So the schools that are in the conference, like, we're not splitting more money just to bring them in. But that, to me, is a problem. It's like, okay, so set that away. Then the question becomes, does the ACC exist at a level to where you can backfill? Because if that's the case, I think Memphis's number's up. Memphis's number's going to get called. I wonder, though, if what happens is kind of what we saw with the Pac-12, which is everyone realizes everyone's getting out, and it's every man for himself, and then you wind up with, you know, maybe two places that don't have a home, and so maybe you can add them to the American. But, like, those are the only scenarios that I see. It's like, do you hold out and say, like, let's keep our eyes on the ACC, and if the Pac-12, like, the Pac-12 will be there in the end, so do you game it out that way, or do you sit there and go, like, this conference is getting worse by the day, we've just got to get out now, and you just go and take the Pac-12 deal, or make a deal with the Pac-12 and get it done?
I wouldn't have any problem with the Pac-12 from a football standpoint. I think it would be a good fit for Memphis from a football point of view. But all this coast-to-coast travel and basketball and trying to get into Corvallis and trying to get into Pullman for a weeknight game, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, both from a financial standpoint and then literally from a physical wear and tear standpoint. I mean, some of these places you got to go in the AAC are not ideal. I mean, obviously, like San Antonio on a weeknight or whatever, East Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina, that's a small town, probably got a small airport, right? But you take it to the next level in the Pac-12. So for football, I could get it. But I don't know that Memphis is less of a football-driven enterprise than almost any other athletic department in America that actually has a decent football program that it cares about. Like, Memphis cares about football. They want to win in football. But basketball is so important that you don't want to imperil your basketball program by forcing them to go and play in all these remote outposts in January and February. There's probably snow on the ground every night. There could be something else out there in just a few years, maybe in the ACC, which historically is a much better basketball league. What's going to happen to Duke, for crying out loud? Is there a scenario where Duke gets left behind in the ACC? You end up in a basketball conference with Duke? I mean, come on. That would be 1,000 times better than flying three time zones away to go play Washington State on a Wednesday night. So, like, I'm not saying that, like, Memphis and Duke are going to be the next Duke-UNC, but if the ACC falls apart, UNC, Clemson, Florida State, all depart, I mean, Duke's not getting the call because their football program isn't squat. So now all of a sudden you could be in a basketball conference with Louisville, with Duke, maybe in 6 years. I mean, I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying I wouldn't totally rule it out either.
My fear on that would be that the Big 12 with your mark, he stated, like, basketball, like, they're willing to be the best basketball conference. I could see where he goes and scoops them up, but to me, like, your best case is you hope that the ACC loses, like, four schools, backfills, and you're a part of that. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about what happened in college basketball last night. Big win for Ole Miss. Also want to get into a little hot seat discussion. We'll do that with Cobb next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Grizzlies have partnered with Club Tales to give one lucky winner the ultimate game day experience for you and a guest. This includes access to a pregame shoot-around, an autograph session, and a Grizzlies swag bag. Visit grizzlies.com/clubtales for more information on how you can win. You must also be 21 or older to enter. Again, grizzlies.com/clubtales. All right, pretty interesting night last night in college basketball, Cobb. I think I want to start first, though, with Alabama and Florida. And as I was watching this game, I found myself wondering, do we need to switch how we talk about those two teams? Because it feels like we still put Bama in the national title contender, and they're still clearly very good. I mean, what? We're talking at worst they're going to be a two seed. But I almost wonder if we're doing a disservice. Like, I wonder if the two real contenders for the whole thing in the SEC are Auburn and Florida rather than Auburn and Alabama.
Florida is frighteningly good. It's painful to say it because as somebody who grew up as a Tennessee fan, there's still a little part of me that struggles to give Florida its due. But they deserve it all.
Despite the Final Fours and the national championships.
that was a tough time in my life. I struggled at that point in my life, right, because we had Florida basketball rolling, and then we had Tim Tebow. I mean, I hated Florida. I really did. I mean, that was a hard time, like, because Tennessee was down in pretty much everything, and Florida was just rolling. Ugh, that was rough.
I mean, they do have that calendar year where it's like basketball national title, football national title, another basketball national title. See if you buy this take. Auburn this year, you know who they remind me the most of? They remind me of that 2014 Florida team. Patrick Young, Scotty Wilbekin, where they were just old, like super battle-tested, scarred, nothing fazed them. I think they went undefeated in SEC play. Like, I remember they went into Rupp, and everyone's like thinking like, oh, here they go. Florida's finally going to get popped by some athleticism. It's like, didn't even faze them. And I know they get beat by UConn in the Final Four, but that's what this Auburn team reminds me of. Like, I know they lost at A&M because they were still hungover on Tuesday, but nothing fazes them, and it feels like there's no moment too big.
Yeah, Auburn's a legit Tier 1A national title contender, but I'm ready to put Florida up there with them. I think Florida's just as good. I mean, Florida spanked them this year already one time. So Florida has no flaws, man. Like, there's nothing that they aren't good at. They can shoot it. They got great guards. And then they have an assembly line, a convoy of bigs, any of whom would be the best big on almost any other team in college basketball. And yet they have hoarded them. They've got four of them. And then they got some 7'6" kid who isn't even playing. So, like, I mean, come
no,
on.
No, that was one of my favorite.
Yeah, that's what's terrifying.
One of my favorite videos this year was the guy that was jumping up to high-five the 7'6" guy. And the caption just read, the guy that's jumping is 6'11".
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's crazy. That guy's not even playing for Florida, and they still have one of the best front courts in college basketball. Alex Condon, man, remember that name. He might be a draft guy. I mean, he's 7 foot. He can protect the rim. Last night, he's stepping out and hitting 2 3-pointers. I mean, so what struck me about last night, it's Alabama's senior night. There's pretty much a number one seed at stake, especially after Tennessee loses to Ole Miss later in the night. And Florida basically went into Alabama and beat them at their own game. And that, you know, so Florida is right there to me with Auburn in that national title conversation. I'm real interested, too, to see how do those two teams handle the SEC tournament next week, because they played each other in the SEC tournament championship game last year, and it really didn't bring them any good fortune come the NCAA tournament, because you work so hard to get there, and then you flame out, you know, in the early rounds.
That title game Sunday, so everyone that knows, like, the bracket's pretty much decided at that point. And then, like, man, if you're one of those teams, you made it all the way to Sunday. Like, let's say you played four games. I'm very curious to see how the SEC tournament gets treated, because I think probably players and coaches, like, they're just not going to be able to turn it off. But, like, if I'm somebody that loses on Friday, like, let's say I go 1-1, man, I think I'm quietly, like, giving a fist pump. Like, good. I'm going home. I'll give them Saturday night off. Come back in. Let's have shoot around. We'll see where we are on the bracket and then get ready. Because, man, if you're one of those teams that played on Sunday and then you'd have to turn right around and play on Thursday, man, that to me, I'm curious, because there's this idea of, man, winning the SEC tournament is going to be harder than winning the national championship. It's like, well, okay. But I also, like, I'm curious, like, who all is, like, going to be in it to win it?
So I think if you're Ole Miss, you're Mississippi State, like, you can't tell me that winning an SEC basketball tournament wouldn't be meaningful to those fan bases, because they don't have a ton of banners, let's be honest, like, in their arenas, other than, hey, we made the NCAA tournament this year or that year, whatever. Like, the championships.
I was talking about this with my dad. Do you realize this is the first time Ole Miss is in the field, like, no questions asked, since 2001?
Wow.
Their last tournament appearance is 2019. But Marshall Henderson, they had to win the SEC tournament. They were going to Dayton before Henderson beat Florida. That got him in as a 12. They beat Wisconsin, and then they lost to LaSalle. They had an appearance with Steph Moody in Dayton. And they were kind of shocked that they got the bid to Dayton. They thought they were toast. And then there were a couple other, like, eight. Kermit's team, they were on the 8-9, but it wasn't like they're in slam dunk on Selection Sunday. This is the first time since 01 that they're in slam dunk.
You know, that my one problem with Ole Miss this year, though, is they just don't have that electric scoring guard dripping in swag like a Marshall Henderson or a Stephon Moody. Oh, my gosh. Those guys are some of my
favorites. Chris Warren? That was the other thing about AK. AK would go find him a guard that nobody wanted, and he just gave him the ultimate green light. And covering those teams were just wild. Like, there was... It's not like Steph Moody, like, he ever yelled at him, like, don't shoot that. Like, that was AK's bread and butter. But, like, that was the other thing about that game last night. I don't know if I've ever seen, like, what Brakefield did was like Disney movie.
Yeah.
19, 0 points in the first half, completely, like, not even a part of the picture. And then he's hitting, like, turnaround, like, one-footed fadeaways. Like, it was insane. Like, he just went, like, he blacked out.
So, yeah, and then he got the offensive rebound to put back to put him ahead. What's crazy to me about Jamin Brakefield, Ole Miss as a whole last night, they're one of the worst rebounding teams in the SEC, period, point blank. Like, statistically speaking, that's been their weakness all season long. You're going up against a Tennessee team that's tough, it's gritty, great defensively. One, Ole Miss only turned the ball over twice in the second half against Tennessee. That's unheard of. And then they just obliterated Tennessee on the offensive glass. Like, so I'm doing my grades of the top 10 teams in the country for tomorrow for what they did this week. And I'm giving Tennessee like a D because they got beat at their, like, at the things that they're supposed to hang their hat on. They stunk at last night. They did four turnovers. They got crushed on the glass. And I'm like, that is a very uncharacteristic performance for Tennessee at a time when a number one seed is on the line. You've never been a number one seed in program history. And you come out there and okay, I'm not mad that you lost at Ole Miss. There's no shame in that at all. You go on the road against an NCAA tournament team in this conference, like, it happens. But the way it happened, I thought was so odd about Tennessee, because It was very counter to their entire ethos.
I didn't really downgrade them after last night because I really felt like watching the game, Tennessee did the stuff that I expected them to do, but Brakefield just goes insane. And then I thought a key part of it in the first half was, while Ole Miss didn't hit any threes in the second half, I felt like Tennessee was about to run away and hide. And then Ole Miss hit five. I think they hit 5 of 11 threes in the first half. And that kind of kept them in it. And then really what it just kind of was, like down the stretch, like I think it was just like they just left it all on the floor. Like Ole Miss reminds me of Arizona State this year in football. Like it's kind of a team where they're extremely well coached and they play hard, but I'm just not convinced that they're that talented. That's what they remind me of. And last night was a night where it's just like, I think they just like, the crowd was into it and they just left it all on the floor. And like, honestly, when the 4-point play happened, I was like, that's it. They're done. They're toast. And then, you know, you kind of need a little luck, like missing the shot at the rim to send the game to overtime. Because I felt like if that game was going to overtime, I knew which way I was leaning and it wasn't to the refs.
Yeah. No, for sure. But I thought it was interesting, right? The reaction Chris Beard had after the game, standing on the chairs, surveying the scene, just sort of soaking it all in for a guy who's won some big games and been to a Final Four. I thought that was interesting. Like the fact that he just took that moment to savor what's been accomplished. And maybe that's it. It's like you mentioned the
Cobb. This is the first time in Ole Miss history that they've beaten a top five team twice. More than one time.
Right. And so, I don't know. Sometimes you lose that perspective, especially this year in the SEC. You're just like, anybody can beat anybody on any given night. It's all whatever. It's all up in the air. But then you really look into the Ole Miss basketball history and like what that probably meant to the school. And let's be real. I mean, when he took that job from Kermit Davis, that program was in the pits. And now here they are less than 2 years later, a stone cold lock for the NCAA tournament. And probably going to have the program's best seeding since 2001, you know, when they made that Sweet 16 under Rod Barnes. So I thought that was cool for them to get that moment. I'm real curious to see, you know, sort of how things shake out on the coaching carousel, see if Chris Beard sticks around.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is, like, to me, Ole Miss feels like one of those teams that, like, they're going to need to see a mid-major on the other side, because like if they go up against like a team with athleticism, like I don't feel great about them. But I was cool scene, fun win. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Kyle, before we get to tell your story tonight on the Grizzlies YouTube channel, the Tony Allen documentary is going to be released. So we've had the Zeebo, we've had the Mark, and tonight we'll have TA. I've not seen it. Jeff went to the premiere on, I believe it was Tuesday night. Said it's phenomenal. Says they get into everything from the insurance fraud to I didn't mute myself on Zoom. Gets into everything from the upbringing, selling drugs, like whatnot. I think this is the one that I'm most looking forward to.
We need these good Grizzlies vibes right now, too, man.
Yeah, we really do.
Feel good about ourselves again. Yeah, maybe some of the current Grizzlies will watch it and be like, okay, so that's what it means to play with some leadership and toughness, you know? That's what we can hope for.
Yeah, and it is interesting how – why do you think that era speaks to us in the way that it does? Because I think to outside people, they look at us like we're nuts. They're like, what, the team like goes to one Western Conference Finals, didn't even win a game – but it's like, man, you just had to live it. Like, I don't know what. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you're just not going to understand it, but you're just going to have to trust it. Like, it matters to us.
Oh, yeah. I've been hounding my group chat full of Knoxville and Nashville people with like, hey, y'all want to come into Memphis March the 15th? They're going to retire Tony Allen's jersey that night, because they don't get it. Like, they laugh about it. But it's the era that cemented the franchise in the soul of the city, because you know I'd mentioned earlier, like the last time I was ever happy with the Grizzlies just not getting swept was Jason Williams and Shane Battier, right? Like you had the Hubie Brown era, that was success to us for so long. And that's how we viewed, you know, like, okay, wow, if you could just do that, then you'd be, that's success. But then they brought it to a whole nother level. And Tony in particular and Zeebo connected with the city on a really powerful level. This group hasn't quite done that yet. Like Ja and Jaren have more superstar power than the rest of every other Grizzly ever combined, like without a doubt. But I don't know if they've connected with the soul of the city like that just yet.
All right. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got a Cobb's coworker, Danny Cannell, who I want to be on very clear. I appreciate Cannell and what Cannell does to the space. You need a Cannell out there, but where did it go? I lost it. Here we go. He screenshots a Ken Pomeroy headline. Why hasn't anyone said the SEC is overrated? Question mark. Danny, the smartest man in basketball, is saying out loud what I've been thinking the past 3 months. Thank you, at Ken Pomeroy. The entire article was explaining why no one has said that the SEC is overrated. It's because of their dominance that they've had throughout all of college basketball.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I just got a text from Danny's producer about if I can go on their show in the morning.
I bring it up. Again, I appreciate what Cannell does for the space. All right, my man, take it easy.
Thanks, brother.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. Gabe Kunchez coming up next.